Madness, presented by Tylenol, the official pain reliever of the NWSL. We've got Santa Herrera and the Calls Are Bony in the house, and I'm your host, Darian Jenkins. We have a fun show for you today. We're going to take a look at the latest news in the transfer market, as well as some retirement news, take a preview of match week 11, and then give you our second half predictions for the rest of the NWSL season. Now, whether you're here on YouTube, watching on Galazzo Network, or listening as a podcast, we appreciate it so much. Make sure you jump in the comments and let us know what is going on. Okay, NWSL's back. You know, it's hard to kind of get back into the rhythm of it because World Cup madness has been insane and all host nations are going through to the round of 16, baby. Sandra, how hyped are you about Mexico?
You know, I was a little nervous to just open the show with like World Cup thoughts and energy because I'm like, I don't know if I could do this because I'll burst into tears, but I'm riding high. It's been incredible watching what all the host nations are doing. You could see how much it means to so many. And it's, you know, on a personal note, like you can't help but think of these historic moments, like as you grow up watching this sport, as you grow up watching this game, past World Cups that maybe you were disappointed in. And you think about just the getting over those hurdles and just the mentality of just getting through it and getting over it and getting to that next step and feeling all the emotions about it, all the happiness and maybe even some of the sadness that comes with that, you know, when you remember folks who aren't around to experience those moments. And it's really all kind of beautiful. That's why we love soccer so much.
McCall, have you been loving all the World Cup coverage?
Oh, it's been like my life every day. Like people are like, want to hang out. I'm like, after 2 o'clock when the game's over, you know, like I'm just like tailoring my entire life around it. Like, and I feel like it's been nothing shy of entertainment as well. There's been, and props, you know, in our line of work, we know how it is to be broadcasters and media people who there's been such great stories that have been dug up by analysts and announcers. And so we're really getting a feel for the players and the special things about them off the field and their journeys to make the World Cup. And like, that's what makes it so strong to connect to is because we know those personal stories, but that comes from the journalists doing the work. So I appreciate that part about it.
Yeah, I do too. And Sandra, I have to say, I went to a Mexico watch party to watch the game the other day, and it was, I've never had more fun watching a game. I've never been showered in more Pacifico in my life either, but it was, I had the best time just being in it and feeling how much it meant to everybody around me. So I love that. Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. all going through to the round of 16. Well, let's jump into NWSL though, because big news is finally official. We've talked about it, I think, for about 3 weeks. Sam Kerr is officially a Gotham player. She's coming back to the NWSL, back to her old stomping ground, still holds the record for most goals in the NWSL. And when we look at this front line, McCall, and just what Sam Kerr can bring, she's a prolific goal scorer, but they also have Esther, Jordan Dudley, Jaden Shaw, Midge Purse. I mean, so many players up top. How does Sam Kerr fit in, and does she really solve the issue that we always talk about with Gotham not being able to score enough goals?
Well, a high-profile player like Sam was always going to a big city and a team that has the ability to win championships. And, you know, what better attraction for her? And first of all, congratulations to Gotham. She chose them. She could have went anywhere in the world. And I think that screams volumes about the attraction of Gotham and what they have built over there, that one of the best players in the world wants to not only come back, but could have gone anywhere. But if I'm on that roster and I'm looking around like, okay, well, that's one more player we have to fit into this best 11 on game day. And, you know, even a Jaden Shaw, because she loves to come back for the ball lower, kind of like Kerr does. So they may be occupying the same spaces at time, but Rose needs that seam too to operate in. So if there's too much congestion in there, and then you look at yourself and you go, okay, well then where's Esther going to go? And then we got Midge, and then we got Deadly Dudley. And if you're Mac Whittam, you're trying to grow in the ranks as a committed, very young professional human who signed a long-term club deal with them in expectation that she would climb the roster ladder and get more playing time eventually. But when you bring in another best in the world player like this, you're suddenly realizing, wow, I've just gone down the pecking order a lot more than I thought. So I think it will, as great as Sam is, it will take some time for them to adjust her into their system because there's just so much firepower on the field and on the roster at the same time.
Yeah. I just think that as excited as I am for Sam Kerr to return, because it just sort of feels like, it just feels right. Like, it just feels like the universe has sort of clicked itself back in. It's like, ah, yes. And like, it's great to hear Kerr and, you know, reading in her interviews that like, she just knew as well that she would return back here, that she knew that this was always going to maybe kind of be endgame for her. And all of that feels good, feels great. But this is just like not only a different version of the East Coast side that she used to be on when it used to be Sky Blue. This is just a completely different league now. So there's going to be that adjustment period for her, not only with her teammates, but for how the league has evolved as well. This is no longer a 10-team top four kind of league. There's 16 teams in this league. You've got teams who try to gun for eight spots at the end of a playoff push. And everyone is like kind of locked in those moments. So there's going to be those different types of adjustments for her as well. I'm not going to doubt the talent, the skill, and the ability. I'm never going to doubt Sam Kerr in that, but I wouldn't be surprised if it maybe takes, you know, some time for all of that to kind of come together.
Yeah, I agree. I think, McCall, I can't remember if you were playing with Gotham at this point or you had retired, but when it was Lynn Williams, Midge Purse, Crystal Dunn, it seemed like champagne problems that actually overflowed and it didn't.
Yeah, that was my last season.
Yeah, it didn't fully gel, or it took a lot of time to kind of figure that out. But I can't wait to see her back in the NWSL, first of all, in a Gotham kit, because I remember coming into the league and just playing against her, watching her just dominate, making something out of nothing with that team, with Sky Blue. And she truly is just one of those players that anywhere she is on the pitch, she can cause issues. And she still has that quality about her. And I think it's just going to elevate that level of Gotham. Already a very consistent team, so strong defensively. Now the X factor up top. That raises the expectation for everybody to get to that level. So
yeah,
I don't know how Yael does it. She's incredible.
Yeah.
What a stacked roster.
Incredible. Quality. Yeah.
Sam Kerr is one of those players that can single-handedly take the horns of a game by herself. Like, she can change a game. If you're down 2-0 and Sam Kerr is on your team, don't worry.
Yeah.
Like, she can change a game on the drop of a hat, on a dime. And to have that weapon in your back pocket is just an incredible threat to any game and every team.
It's going to be tough for other teams too. It's like, it's just like another piece that opposing sides are going to have to prepare for. Even if there's this concept of like, let's start you off slow. Why don't you come in off the bench? It's like, can you imagine you're like trying to maintain your like one goal lead and then you've got Sam Kerr tapping in? It's like, it's foolish actually to think that you would have survived this. So it's going to be tough. There will be that adjustment period, but it'll also equally be is tough for the other teams. You have to prepare for that.
Another team that is having a lot of movement with their squad is Barcelona. Salma Peruelo is officially leaving the squad amongst some other players. But before we jump into the other players as well, this is a young player. She's electric. She can get in behind. She can play in tight pockets of space. She's not afraid to go 1v1. She's bold on the ball and still has more room to grow. If we're looking at where she could potentially go to, NWSL, Europe, wherever you guys think, Sandra, where do you think would be the ideal fit for Salma Peruelo?
I mean, I'd love to see her stateside, but I don't know. Just with some of the things we've been reading about and some of the reports about how negotiations are going for her. I think there was sort of just, I think it was Chelsea at one point that was just like, we were interested, but we're going to move on. There's this sort of storyline out there right now that maybe her and her team are kind of overvaluing contracts and things like that. But I think if you are a team, perhaps maybe trying to build something, if you are trying to look for a striker who can get out there and kind of mix things up or shake things up, just not for your roster, but for other teams that are going up against you, that this is a player of value. And I would argue that maybe a team like London City Lionesses that are maybe going to try to find those next steps or want to try to find those players who can still build towards something special is the type of team and player that maybe they could kind of fit together. When I look at NWSL. I think there are plenty of teams in this league at stateside that are like also in similar situations where they're like, you know, we can use a really kind of marquee, you know, big name kind of striker to sort of just even shake things up. Even if there is that concept of like she's got to come from Europe, there will be that adjustment period. It'll still do things for your locker room, for your club. It'll change things up. So I don't know if maybe she goes from a Barcelona to a Chelsea, you know, or to an Arsenal or to an OL even, because those are these kind of bona fides in terms of Champions League. I do wonder if there's room for her for those types of teams that are chasing that kind of mentality, that type of culture. So maybe London City Lioness, maybe a PSG even, who are desperate to maybe kind of get back and compete a little bit. So that's kind of where I maybe see her fall into.
A player like Parloelo, she still plays very youthful at times in her decision-making in the third. I mean, she's only 22 years old. But she has the tools that are really attractive for any club. Pace, determination for goal, willingness to break it behind. She's also good on the dribble. But her next club decision is going to be so huge because she needs a bit more development and a manager that's going to get a hold of her potential and make it blossom. And truthfully, I believe that is a team at NWSL, because she needs to be under pressure in tight spaces to make better decision-making quicker and faster. And you're going to get that in the NWSL because it is such high tempo, high press. And so that's going to force her to think quicker and to make better decisions on the ball. And if she can develop that into her game, she's going to be a very valuable striker and considerably one of the best in the world.
I would argue she's up there. She's in like the top 30,
oh, but she has so much more, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, 100%. She's still really young. I mean, I would love to have her in the NWSL. I'm like, they could use someone like her. Gotham, I mean, Yael would probably get her. Let's be real at this point.
Honestly.
Don't start nothing. Don't start nothing, D.
Starting rumors right now. Orlando would be amazing. Would love to have her here, but I think a player of her caliber, you want to play in Champions League still. You're a multi-Champions League winner. Player of the game, top goal scorer each year that you participated in it. Sandra, I agree. I think London City Lionesses, I've been backing them for since last year, since they came into the WSL. And I think when you look at how they started with so much veteran leadership, very experienced players, older players. Yeah. And they're acquiring these younger players. And it seems like poaching quite a few off of Barcelona as well. Rumors of Alexis Putellas going there, Mapi Lyon, Onabati is going into the WSL as well. I mean, I don't know. We'll see where she ends up going. Maybe we need a rumor mill episode once again. Other news, Katie Lampson, formerly Katie Stengel, is officially retiring. Two-time NWSL champion, two iconic playoff goals for Gotham, is finally retiring from the NWSL. McCall, I know you've played with her. I mean, how happy are you for her, and bittersweet is it to see her stepping away from the game?
I'm stoked for her because I think it really is such a big decision to decide whether you want to retire or not. And then it's kind of like that huge, you know, weight is lifted off of you once you decide good and for all. But I love her as a person. She's a breath of fresh air. And I just love her story because she left and came back twice. Liverpool, then came back. Crystal Palace, then came back. She also played in Australia almost like every offseason of the NWSL. Mm-hmm. She was always looking for places to play and test herself as a professional. And she's really brave to try new things and places in order to grow. And I think that bravery and courage really served her well in playoff moments. And that's why she was so clutch. Because no matter how big the moment was or the game was, she was unfazed because she had handled so much throughout her career. And she's a really funny person, you guys. She's clever. She's witty. Like I said, she looks through life with a refreshing lens. So she's a breath of fresh air. And she will be missed to watch. We love her. We love you.
Whenever there's a player retirement announced, you always take a moment to kind of take a look at their career and sort of where they've been and what they've accomplished. And you look at like Lampson and you just can't help but kind of take note and say like, wow, this might be like just one of those definitive type of, you know, foundational type of players in NWSL specifically, even though she's got so much experience across other leagues as well. So I'm just kind of like you mentioning the W League in Australia, you know, McCall. It's like it takes me back to like maybe that first, like the early half of NWSL years, where like pro players were still trying to figure out what it meant to be a pro and how mm-hmm. you had to still kind of make sure that you found those areas to play in, those leagues that wanted to take chances on you and get minutes. And so I think whether it's NWSL or W League specifically, or even a team like Crystal Palace in Women's Super League, like how kind of Lamson is kind of like this foundational player in like really a lot of these different places. And I think that's also what's really special when you sort of see these types of players kind of hang up their boots. So congrats to her on a great career. I mean, walking away with two championships with where she had a huge role is nothing to sniff at. And yeah, she's always going to be remembered for those if for nothing else. So congratulations on retirement.
Oh, I love this. Congratulations, Katie. I mean, to you, Sandra, I think you said it so well. She's one of those players that I feel the league is truly built on, that went from team to team, grinded it out, went and played overseas, came back, gave everything to the game, and got her championship ring. She's just such a gritty player, and I can't wait to see what she does in her next chapter. So congratulations, Katie Lamson. We appreciate everything you've given to the game. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break, and we are doing Match Week 11 previews next. Hey, friends, welcome back into Attacking Third. All right, let's look into previewing this weekend's NWSL matches because it is back, baby. So first up, Denver Summit versus Kansas City Current. Now, KC's coming off of the loss in the Challenge Cup against the ever-so-stacked Gotham. And Denver Summit also has a big boost. They have a new training center. Lindsay Heaps is around. She's not able to play this weekend just due to the transfer window stipulations. But I feel like just having that presence of her is a huge addition to them. McCall, when you're looking at this, who do you think has the edge coming into this game?
This is why the break makes it so tricky, because in the past, we've literally seen like two identities from the same team, one prior to the break and one post the break. Like they have two different personalities. I think Denver started really brilliantly for being an expansion team, and they were off to a great start. But, you know, again, it's a question mark for both of these teams returning, whereas I think a little bit of an edge for this game is Kansas City actually played a competitive game recently. And yeah. So they might be gelling and clicking a little bit more than a Denver who is going through a summer break for the first time as a club, as Nick Cushing being first time in the NWSL and managing that, you know, summer break and that time. I think the Kansas City might have a little bit more of an edge on this one. And what I loved about watching that Challenge Cup was Croy starting to look a little bit more like herself without Centaur in there. It's kind of like they were operating in the same spaces and kind of getting in each other's way. Well, now Croy can just Croy around the field and do her thing. And I think that's going to be a really healthy thing, because once Croy gets going, let her cook, give her the space, give her the time, give her the ball, let her do her thing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a huge benefit to KC that they had not just any game, but like a high stakes game. You know, there was a trophy on the line. They went up against an incredible team in Gotham. So there's no better way, I think, maybe to get that return to your regular season than maybe kind of go through a little bit of that early adversity. It's like they're going to be motivated by that. They're going to be pissed off at that. I mean, this is a team that kind of clawed their way back into the playoff picture ahead of that break. And then they also had some really big movement in the middle of that break, you know, in moving Centaur out of the team. And so how are they going to operate moving forward? This is also going to be a really important time for Kansas City to kind of maybe pick up, you know, those results where they can get them, because on the horizon is Women's AFCON. And then eventually they're going to have to navigate this season without their most prolific player in Atemwa Chiwenga. So I think it's going to be very good for Coy Bethune to turn it on. Kind of looks or feels like maybe she can be a player that can kind of have this second half of the season emergence. I'm going to keep my eye on her for sure. And I just think that maybe in this one, Kansas City will be a little bit more motivated to kind of go off and get off on the right foot. So I think Denver down the stretch, maybe with Heaps, they'll get it together. But I think KC had the edge in this one.
Oof. Guys, I'm actually going to go with Denver having the edge. I think, McCall, we know from playing in trailers and what the hell else NWSL used to be doing, they have a massive training facility to go into a break, come back into training after a week, and you see you're in this professionalized environment, has everything a player could possibly dream of. Lindsay Heaps, her presence there, what she adds, the expectation of playing with a player like her adds to the team. I think they're very hungry. I think Nick Cushing knows exactly what he needs to do. And when I look at these two coaches as well, they've coached against each other in the MLS. They know each other very well. So I actually give the edge to Denver. I think Kansas City is going to be frustrated losing that match to Gotham, especially with the healthy Tim Washawinga, who, again, I just recall the goal where she just trucks past the entire team and scores in her first match against Gotham ever. I don't know. Something about me is saying Denver is setting the tone for the second half of the season with this game, and it could be the exact statement that they need. Before we move on, I do want to get score predictions, though. I'm going to go 2-1 to Denver. McCall, what do you
think? I think it's going to be 2-1 Kansas City.
Same. I think we got 3 goals in this one, but I think it's 2-1 KC.
I'm here for the goals. Let's look at San Diego and Gotham. First versus fifth. San Diego ended strong. Gotham coming off of that Challenge Cup win. Sandra, when you look at the San Diego side and what they've added, the young players stepping up, they're scoring goals. They've got that definitive style of play that we all love, poetry in motion. Do you think that San Diego can maintain that momentum that they had going into the second half? Because last year, I think this was their biggest issue after the summer break.
I think that's the biggest question. We want to see them carry it over. And I hate to be this way. I'm nervous for them. What is this team going to look like in their Dudingelis kind of era? I mean, soccer is what it is. Injury. Horrific injury comes with the sport, unfortunately. And they are now going to operate without this player who was arguably their MVP of the season, putting together her own kind of MVP campaign for the league. And now she's gone. And so it's going to take some getting used to. There's going to be some adjustments that need to be made. And that's going to not only fall on the responsibility of the players, but also the staff to kind of figure out and plug in and play what and who works best moving forward. And I think having that first test against Gotham is going to be a really, really tough temperature check for them, especially a team that's coming off of a trophy. They're coming off a cup win in Challenge Cup. So I want to believe in San Diego Wave and what they're doing right now, but it just sort of feels that's the type of player Jujinha was for them in 2026. It is that jarring. So TBD on Macario. I don't think we've seen any official updates from the Wave just yet on her status. We'll see how maybe the break has treated her. But as far as Gotham, they look like they're ready to get back into this regular season and just go. They're ready to show us that they are the Gotham who we know them to be. So I'm leaning more towards Gotham in this one, D.
What most excites me about this matchup, and this is the one I'm most excited for this weekend, is it's number one versus number one. Number one on the table right now and the team who won the championship last year. And San Diego, I'm shocked that people aren't freaking out as much about Jujinha as I think that they should. She, for me, was their answer, was unlocking everything in every game for them. However, it could be a circumstance where now with her absence, hopefully other players will step up that we had big expectations for, that now will have a little bit more space to roam and kind of take the team on their back. But San Diego was exactly that team last season that had a brilliant start to the first half and second half just did not treat the break right and came back really in a slump and lost it all, and they could have won the Shield.
Yeah, when I think about losing Jujinha, there's no news on Macario. I don't think we've seen the best of Ludmila, Porcillo.
That's what I mean.
There hasn't been enough. But then again, sometimes you can rally, and I don't know. We just haven't seen San Diego rally yet, this new team. So I think this is the ultimate test. And against Gotham, I mean, welcome back to the second half of the season. I think it's kind of a younger team versus a team that has a lot of experience that literally has not had a break in over a year because they've been playing in tournaments in the off season and everything. The Challenge Cup was a huge asset to them. Sam Kerr, that's a big boost coming into this. Could be tough
for
San Diego.
For San Diego, where are you playing Macario?
At the nine.
Where are you putting Ludmila?
In a wing channel.
I'm like just off the bench. I'm like, listen, they've already tried that already with her. I mean, that's kind of her role right now, or was, you know, as Dudinje was tearing it up, but maybe
she
that was
just
part
doesn't
of
have enough defensive discipline to be a winger, Ludmila.
I think she's gonna have to be that kind of, maybe they're going to have to ask that of her. They're going to have to ask that of this player to kind of turn the mindset a little bit into this sort of X Factory kind of spark plug off the bench type of player moving forward. But I think that all depends on Macario's availability. We haven't seen this player, you know, lace him up for NWSL yet. It really just depends on how they're also managing Macario's injury, you know, along the way as well. So TBD on all those fronts.
Ludmila could be one of those players as well that I think we saw it a bit with Chicago in the latter half of the season where she was coming out and scoring hat tricks in 15 minutes off of the bench. So maybe that's where they start getting the best out of her and then incorporate her into more of the game. But we'll see. That's also going to be a really interesting game. Score predictions for that one before we move on, Sandra.
I'm going to go 3-1 Gotham.
I'm going 1-1.
1-1. I want goals this weekend. I don't want to believe that the slump's gonna affect everyone. I'm gonna hope that we get like lots of goals.
It feels like a new preseason or something. More chaos at the beginning. Yeah. I'm gonna go 2-1 to Gotham. Yeah, I think they're riding high off of that Challenge Cup win. All right, Angel City versus Orlando Pride. Now, this one's interesting because there's no update around Barbara Banda. We talked about how Orlando has struggled to score goals when she's not the one scoring or providing the assists. And Angel City, yeah, they get Ali Sentnor, which is a great move for Angel City. They don't have a coach. Alex Strauss has been let go, and there's still no update about who is coaching the team other than having somebody in the interim or what is next. And I think Angel City just seems plagued with this. They're always in this sort of gray area of, hey, we're building into what's next. We're going to give the coach a long runway to then they don't have a coach. They're signing big players. But if you're a big player going to Angel City, there's no coach there giving direction. Yeah, I'm just confused. I think both of these teams, I'm in gray areas for both of them. McCall, do you feel the same when you're looking at this matchup this weekend?
This game has 0-0 written all over it. It's going to be two disjointed, disorganized clubs that are in disarray and like trying to re-identify themselves, aren't gelling. One doesn't have a coach. One doesn't have their best player. One just got a new high profile player that they're going to have to, you know, get some wrinkles in there and smooth those out. It's just going to be a lot of change of possession. I don't want to say sloppy play, but just a little bit of not a lot of organized thought out there because it's in disarray for both clubs right now.
Listen, this matchup, this head-to-head has quickly become one of my favorite rivalries. It's not the type of matchup that like I think folks look at and they're like, That's a rivalry. But for the sickos and the psychos, this is an NWSL rivalry. There's something about these two teams when they like go head to head. It just always ends in like some wild stuff. Like they met earlier and it was just like locked in to each other for a little bit until Orlando pulled ahead and won it. And then they also are capable of playing to some really wild draws against each other in the past. But Orlando has often had the edge in this one against Angel City in very frustrating types of ways where it's like you see Angel City at the end of some of those old results where they just like let a game go essentially against the Pride and they're like pissed at themselves. And so I'm almost sort of like waiting for Angel City to like wake up against Orlando, because they have found themselves in so many games against this team, but have just either let all the points go or have only been able to walk away with one. So I don't know if the odds are in their favor in this one, just because of all the great points that, you know, McCall has mentioned already, and some of how these two teams operated in the break. The new signing in Centaur, how's that going to look? Where's the update, you know, on Banda? So I think all those things, though, all those question marks might lead to maybe another one of those, what are we going to get here? And I feel like if folks are maybe looking for that kind of game that feels like the first came back from a break, like I kind of think it might be this one a little bit.
I agree with that. I actually think this could be quite chaotic because of all of those factors.
Oh, and then sprinkle in the Los Angeles crowd at BMO Stadium. It's going to be an uproar of just craziness.
Well, I'm thinking about, too, if you're LA Centaur, you want to go and prove that this is the second move you're making in a short amount of time on a team to go get playing time, get back into the national team as a player that gets lucrative minutes, potential starts. You want to go and make a statement. You want to go and make a statement against Orlando Pride, first game at home. I actually think this could be a 2-2. I agree with the draw, but I think it could be a little bit more chaotic than a 1-1.
I'm with you. I think we could get a draw in this one. I also hope it's a 2-2. And I also hope it happens from like the 79th minute and on, because that's also like what happens when these two teams meet. They agonize each other until like they have no choice but to try some stuff. And so I hope that's what we get in this one. 2-2 draw with four goals coming in like 15 minutes.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a look around the grounds, because Utah so strong this first half of the season. Yes, they're in second, but just right behind San Diego, arguably the most consistent team throughout the season that we've seen, and their style of play, how defensive they are, how they're good at countering. Everything's just come together for Utah this season. And they're playing against Chicago this Sunday, a team that still struggling, still trying to put together exactly what their game plan is. But Mal Swanson is back. She did score before the break, which I think is a huge boost of momentum. But McCall, when we're looking at Utah, is this a team that you think is just going to pick up right where they left off with Jimmy Kunratz?
Yeah, because they are one of those teams last season that came back better after the break. They were one of the ones that totally turned it around. And, you know, I look across the grounds for, they have one of the least amount of players away at national team duty. So they are playing together cohesively throughout this break, keeping their vibe, keeping their flow, and keeping that energy within the team. So Utah, I don't see them, you know, people are like, oh, they're going to slump or lose it. I don't see that from them at all. I think that they have grinded and done all the right things for a long period of time, and they withstood so much pressure and criticism, and they're used to, you know, having bad feelings on the outside of their environment and maintaining a strong collective within their environment. They'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't feel too worried about Utah, although I maybe have like that, this is the trauma brain speaking. Like we've mentioned this with San Diego Wave. There's something about that second half of the season when it comes up, and it's a little bit of a reset button for many teams. And for some teams who maybe did a lot of special things in that first half of the season, they now find themselves going against everyone in the league who has finally woken up. We see more draws in the second half of the season. We see tighter games, maybe more cagey at times. And it's because everyone else has also realized, oh, that's right, I too have 11, 12 something games under my belt. Let's all wake up and go. So while I do think Utah might run into some of that in this second half of the stretch, if you want to show that you are a team that is going to be serious about contending for a shield, for a championship, you cannot go, even as the visiting side, to one of the bottom table teams and just sort of kind of crap the bed. There's absolutely all is fair in love and sport, honestly. And you have to look at that team on the other side and say, that is a team we're going to go into their house and beat. And if you're Chicago, you have to also be kind of motivated by that as well. They had an active offseason. They fired their GM. They, you know, they went ahead and they announced a defensive-minded signing in Leila Uwabi. So they're trying to maybe show that they're going to still compete somehow this season. When you have Amel Swanson, I would argue it's easy to maybe believe that a little bit. So it might not be easy, because it's tough playing in the heat of Chicago off of a lake sometimes. But I do think Utah has more pieces on their roster to make sure that they come out with a result in this one.
Yeah, I think they play more as a team than most of the teams in the NWSL right now. I like this comment from Roxy Lola's mama. Utah has some sass. That's great for them. Don't count them out yet. I don't think anyone can count this team out. I love that shout. I think they're gritty. They play together. We interview the players after games and they just say, we're a family. Like, we truly love each other. We still have so much fun. And I think that that's carries a team much further than just being a great footballing team does. So Chicago, we'll see. I have some hope for them, but when we're looking at a score prediction, I'm going 3-1 to Utah. I think they're hungry to prove their point off of this break.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I might go 2-1, but they're getting the dub in this one.
Utah is a team that the players have been together. It's been through so much together. And so they're not going to, they haven't skipped a beat. They're used to this and they're going to come out. And I think it's going to be 3-0.
Oof. I like that. Well, all high scoring goals this weekend. All right. I'm here for it. Well, everyone, stick with us. We're going to take a quick break and give our second half predictions next. Welcome back to Attacking Third, presented by Tylenol, the official pain reliever of the NWSL. All right, let's get into second half of the season predictions. We are going to take a look at Shield winners, champions, if Denver will make the playoffs, Golden Boot winner, rookie of the year, and coach of the year. Sandra, do you want to kick us off first with who do you think the Shield winner will be?
All right, we're starting with Shield winners. I was actually trying to remember in our predictions piece that we threw out on .com, like who I went with in this one. And I want to say I went with the Spirit. And I think I'm going to stay with the Spirit, honestly. Okay. They're in the mix. They're not that far off from this table right now. Utah's doing incredible things. We're also just like not really talking about Portland in the way that we're talking about San Diego or Utah maybe. And they're also a team that are just like right there in the thick of it. And so I think what's most, one of the more exciting storylines heading into the second half of the season is, in fact, how many teams are in serious contention for the Shield. So I'm going Spirit with this one. I think they still have enough time and a couple games in hand to make it happen. Spirit.
Okay, so I'm sure a lot of people saw online, I already made predictions for the broadcast team. but with all this movement, I got to change up my answers now. So we made those predictions prior to this summer move. My Shield winner is Gotham FC. A big part of that reason is because I want it for them so badly. I think this is the one thing that they haven't achieved that they need to challenge themselves to do in order to be that dominant team that we all imagine that they can be. They've won the championship multiple times. They're winning, you know, other cups and other tournaments. The one thing they haven't done is win a Shield. So for me, if I was on the team still, that would be my main focus, is like, this is how we stake our claim and state that we are the best team week in, week out. We win this Shield and we will exercise our dominance, not only over this league, but, you know, remind the rest of the world, like, we're dominating one of the hardest leagues in the world.
Ooh, I love this. I'm going with Utah Royals. Utah Royals can win the Shield. Yes, I do. I've loved Kate Del Fava. I think she's been incredible. I think that they don't even let games get to a point where they have to be so defensive anymore. Their counter press is amazing. We'll see. These are predictions, everybody. All right. Champions. McCall, who you got? Who do you think is going to win this?
I have Spirit. I just think that they have been sniffing so close to it. And when that's taken away from you several times as a player, it is like all you want, and you dedicate your life, and you just, it stings just so bad that you just are so locked in, so committed. And I think their roster is very strong as a team individually. I think they're not going to come back super great this next week or so, because they're the team that has the most international players or national team players that have been away. So I think they had probably the most tricky and interesting summer camp out of any team this week or these couple weeks. But nonetheless, in the end, they're going to be in the playoffs, and they're going to make it happen for themselves this year without penalties. God forbid. win in regular time, please.
Please, no. McCall, I'm with you. I have Spirit winning it. I think back-to-back championship games that you lose, and now it's in your backyard this year, you got to get it done. Sandra, who you got?
Listen, I'm here for the lore. I got Gotham in this one. I think they're going to go in D.C. and do the evil thing and win in D.C. I love what we're seeing from Gotham. I'm here for it. This team is kind of been built and is still being constructed to go out there and win a big one in whichever way it comes. I don't know if it'll be the Shield, because it takes something really special to go out there and literally win the league. That is probably the hardest thing to win. The NWSL Shield is the hardest thing to win in this league, and it will only continue to get harder as the league expands and as games get added on. So I think they're made to go and get those cups. They're there to get the Challenge Cup. They can maybe go and compete in maybe some of these club competitions. But I think another championship is in their future, and I think it could be as soon as this year. So I think Gotham are going to take another one.
I mean, that's not a bad shout with Sam Kerr coming back. That's not bad. Well, another team that we need to talk about is Denver. Expansion team. They're doing well. Nick Cushing is extra motivated after this break. Will they make the playoffs? I say yes. I think Denver will be comfortable in playoffs.
I do too. I think about who's in front of them a little bit right now too, and I'm like, Can they leapfrog a North Carolina, a Casey Curran, you know, a Orlando Pride, maybe even a Seattle Reign, because Seattle is, you know, starting off on the bottom half of the table, and they're going to be motivated as too. But I think Denver has some pieces, or they're also getting more pieces to go ahead and make that leap. I think they can go ahead and make playoffs.
Yes, Denver is making the playoffs. They have 15 points. Number 8 spot right now is 2 points away from them at 17, and they have 2 games in hand. So they've played less games than everybody, and they're still sticking in there at the right, floating at that number 8 spot. And I just think they're going to put on a lot more better performances, even better than we've seen. And I think they're a complete team. They have all the assets, all the tools. And then Lindsay Heaps is a profound winner on the international stage and club stage. She's going to bring that eloquence of, you know, victory week in and week out, and managing games and moments that maybe you just need to like hold on to this win or hold on to this away tie. She's so game savvy and smart like that. And so she'll figure out a way to always grab points for this Denver team.
Golden Boot winner. Golden Boot. Sandra, who you got for this one? We've got a couple of options.
Oh my goodness. We certainly do. I had Barbara Banda in this one, and I guess this is where we preface things by saying like, we don't have all the info yet. But it's hard to even shipped away from that, even with the possibility that she's going to maybe be gone for a few weeks or have different availability, you know, for this team moving forward in the second half. I'm still sticking with Banda if she's healthy down the stretch. I don't think you look at a player who's been doing what she's been doing for Orlando this year and go against that.
Same. 11 goals. Even if she is out for a couple of weeks, we've seen Banda come back with a vengeance to score once again. So I'm not worried. She's leading the table right now. If she's out for a couple of weeks, people can catch up. She's going to make her way back in there.
I don't have Banda because I think that she has been a one-man band. She's been really alone out there. She's been really alone out there, and that's going to get exhausting for her. And especially she's coming back from injury and she can't play full minutes, and then losing a little bit of fitness, and she's just carrying the team on her back. It can't last for the rest of the season. She needs a little bit more help up there. So that's why I think Chewinga is going to steam ahead and pull it off again.
We will see. Yep. All right. Well, let's go on to Rookie of the Year. Jordan Dudley's my Rookie of the Year. I think she's been a standout for Gotham. Gotham are getting a lot of shouts on this list. She's been incredible. I think she's building in confidence. Also, for players coming out of college, I think this break was massive as a reset because the season is so long and it's a big adjustment as a rookie to get used to how long it is and trying to maintain yourself. So she's got my Rookie of the Year shout. Sandra, what about you?
It's tough. It's hard to ignore what Dudley is doing right now, especially off of that Challenge Cup. But I do wonder about the Sam Kerr of it all moving forward. I think about that in really just the most recent, like, NWSL Rookie of the Year race. And last year, I think there was maybe that counter argument with someone like a Riley Tiernan, who had just sort of slowed down a little bit in terms of, you know, the goal scoring. And after getting that really hot start and having a really promising season for Angel City, you could sort of see what happens to a lot of players in NWSL. Sometimes you hit a plateau a little bit. And I think that kind of is what lost her a little bit of extra energy in that Rookie of the Year race last year. And then I'm going to Real, who was a little bit more consistent and ended up making playoffs with the team. So I think all those things are going to come in for sure. I think if Dudley keeps scoring, she gets the Rookie of the Year easily. I think if what we've seen in the past, it slows down a little bit with Sam Kerr, maybe she does it. And that's why I'm going to lean Leah Godfrey in this one. I think they have to shake things up in San Diego Wave. And I think part of that is going to maybe rely a little bit on what they were doing in maybe those first 7 weeks of the season. And not only is this a player who has come into this league as maybe one of the more seasoned collegiate players, because she came in after full seasons with Virginia at 23. I think that's helped her a bit in NWSL. So I'm going to lean towards Leah Godfrey just because of her abilities, not just to score goals, but to create and help maintain what maybe San Diego is trying to put together themselves.
Thank you, Sandra. I thought for a second you were blinded by the shine too, because Dudley is a very shiny, stellar player. Like, you just love watching her play, the way she moves, her aggression, you know, very exciting player to watch. But the stats speak for themselves. Leah Godfrey has 4 goals and 3 assists, her goal contribution for the San Diego team. And not only that, the spaces that she occupies throughout the game alleviate the rest of the players around her to create and go make things happen. She's so wise for a young player, because we're talking about a rookie. We're talking about Rookie of the Year. Her game understanding and the way she's had an effect against every single opponent. And in a different way, she's able to read the game and be like, okay, I need to do this today. I need to be here today. And that's why she's able to score goals and get assists, because she's actually thinking out there with her brain at a very high level for a young player. And I'm highly impressed with her. And so she's my vote.
It's a 2-person race right now for sure.
Yeah. I love the Leah Godfrey shout. It'll be interesting to see her positioning and what changes with her for San Diego with Eugenia being out, because I think that they played off of each other really, really well. Well, Coach of the Year, McCall, why don't you give us your prediction for Coach of the Year first?
First, I'm just going to say Jimmy Kunratz. I think, you know, he's finally being able to lay in the bed that he made every day without anybody noticing and giving him criticism, and he deserves it. He stuck to his guns, and I love the way he's a player's coach. He really cares about the individual, and he puts them in their best positions to thrive and play to their strengths. So everyone out there on Utah looks like they feel comfortable in what's being asked of them, because he knows what their strengths are. And when you feel comfortable and free, you're going to put on your best game. And I think that takes a lot of cognition and noticing from a coach to put players in their best position to strive and thrive. And so I love that for him.
I think that's a great shout. I think if Utah does break through to the playoffs or ends up winning a Shield in some capacity, like, that's going to be very difficult to ignore. If they stumble, if they fall, maybe even just make through the playoffs, I think there's room for some other coaches to make do. And that's where I'm kind of leaning a little bit. I'm looking at Adrian Gonzalez for Washington Spirit. I think if they somehow continue to march through and produce how we know they're capable of producing on the pitch and in the season, and they maybe find themselves winning a Shield or find themselves back in a playoff, I think he's also putting together a campaign that's hard to ignore. Also, in a similar way to Kunrant, been through some things with this Spirit side. Had to start off as that interim. Had to kind of give back the reins when Giraldez came over. And then they said, actually, we were just kidding. We need you. And now he's like the man in charge. And you can also see those similarities in how his team responds to him and how he coaches them and how they kind of all operate and gel together from the sidelines to the pitch. And so I think Gonzalez can have a good case at the end as well.
Both really good shouts. I love that we all did different on this one. I'm actually going with Nick Cushing. I believe in Denver, y'all. I really love the way that they play. Janine Sonis is such a great leader. They have a variety of goal scorers. They just continue to get better and better. I think they just haven't found the balance of what it takes to compete in a season this long, but I think the break is an asset to them. So I'm going with Nick Cushing. We all think they're going to make playoffs. They're bringing in Lindsay Heaps. They may surprise us all. I don't know.
I love it. I love the three different options.
Me too. But all great predictions. We know that we've got the evidence. We will come back and check these as the end of the season starts to wind down. But everybody, this was our show previewing Match Week 11 predictions and taking a peep at the transfer market. Don't forget, Attacking Third will be back this Sunday, 9 p.m. after the Portland Thorns and Racing Louisville match to give you analysis, break things down, special interview, and of course, the team of the week. So thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. From Sandra, McCall, Audrey, and Phil, I'm Darian, and this is Attacking Third. Podcasts.